Are you under the age of 30? Are you worried about that pesky future menopause? Well, don't be. At CHOPPA Ovarian Transplant Services Incorporated, we can simply remove a part of your ovary, freeze it, and then stick it back in later on, where we can delay menopause for at least 20 years. That's right, while all of your sucker girlfriends are going through menopause and hot flashes at the age of 45 or 50, you'll have your freshly transplanted ovarian tissue working just fine until about the age of 70 or 80. Typical side effect includes the continuation of periods for that time. But that's another story. Yep, sign up at the CHOPPA Ovarian Transplantation Institute for more information and schedule your surgery today. No. I know I'm probably going to get some pushback or some ugly message for that little fake commercial, but I don't care. Because we've got to call attention to this. Like everything else in medicine, a perfectly legit and necessary intervention and concept, which is ovarian preservation for fertility, mainly for patients who are going to go through some kind of chemotherapy or XRT because of a malignancy and are trying to preserve their own ovarian tissue for later fertility. That concept is totally legit and sometimes necessary. That great concept can get a little kind of confusing and misapplied electively. So we're going to talk about this. This is making a lot of headlines. It's in a lot of press releases over the last 2 to 3 days, and it's making its way on the media posts. This is a big cautionary tale here of the fringes of medicine. And just because something is published, like this article that we're going to cover from the American Journal of OBGYN that came out just in January of 2024, we're going to talk about why this publication, which is just a mathematical model and not a true clinical study, is causing all sorts of confusion and excitement for the wrong reasons. And we're going to cover this in case a patient pops in your office and says, "Hey, can you take out a little slice of my ovary and freeze it like in the deep freezer and then just stick it back in later so I can avoid menopause?" I'm sure at some point you're going to be asked about this because it's kind of sexy, it's super like sci-fi, and that's still on the fringe of mainstream medicine. We're going to cover this. We're going to cover the potential benefits for sure, and the huge lists of unknowns and risks. But this is a real thing here, guys, making a lot of press, mainly because of one group here in the U.S. On the northeast side. And I hate to give any names out. I just don't want to call that much attention to it. But it did start with this group of researchers at this very well-known medical school in the northeast area, and it's kind of gone global. It's a fascinating idea that really has no proven benefit. We're going to talk about it in this episode. Just trying to keep everyone up to date on evidence-based practice because medicine moves real fast. This is Clinical Pearls.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
In our immediate past podcast, I said that I had bumped this topic to do the one that we did yesterday, which was on glucose checks, whether it should be premeal or postprandial. And I said that I wanted to cover two things. One is the potential benefit of stem cells to reverse POI, premature ovarian insufficiency, and then tackle this thing of ovarian autotransplantation. I'm not going to focus on the stem cells in this one because that was in an animal model and that's totally different than platelet-rich plasma, which, short of it is, data is super conflicting. And yes, there's been some successes in waking up the ovary with injection of these platelet-rich plasma into the ovarian stroma, as well as stem cells in an animal model. It's very unclear, and it's not sure if it's actually the platelet-rich plasma that's doing it or just the hypervascularity that results from the ovarian trauma of having a needle stuck into it and then putting volume into it, okay? Because in some studies, just simply injecting the ovary with saline temporarily wakes them up a little bit. And so it's possible, but right now, again, still controversial on that end. But there is data for that. I want to focus on this ovarian autotransplantation thing because it's getting kind of weird, all right? Because this is popping up in newsprints across the globe. And in case you get a patient that comes in to ask for this, I think it's important to cover this. So let's focus on this ovarian autotransplantation issue, not for the cancer patient, to be clear. This is electively for menopause prevention. That's what it's being billed as. So that's the focus here. I just wanted to set that clear. I'm only covering the autotransplantation topic in this episode. One of the most difficult things outside of the diagnosis itself of treatments are one of the most devastating side effects of some necessary treatments, typically for malignancies, is the gonadotoxic effects of certain chemotherapeutic agents or pelvic XRT when dealing with certain kinds of malignancies that results in the loss of fertility or early menopause in these young reproductive age women. I mean, it's hard enough to get a diagnosis that you've got some kind of malignancy and then have to go through the treatment for that. But then to hear, by the way, this is probably going to zap your ovaries. And the good news is we can increase your longevity with these treatments. The bad news is, well, you're kind of going to be in menopause and probably zap your entire fertility, your chance of having a family. And that's devastating, obviously, for those who want to have a family down the road. So the ability to take some ovarian tissue, harvest it, and cryopreserve it, freeze it, and then later place it back for fertility is a huge, huge opportunity for that very select patient. And ASRM recognizes that. The American Society of Reproductive Medicine no longer considers ovarian autotransplantation experimental, but considers it a type of ovarian and reproductive preservation therapy in patients who have a malignancy and are undergoing some kind of gonadotoxic therapy. So you see, let's just start right here. You see how a legitimate procedure, ovarian harvesting, cryopreservation, and then putting back as a way to try to save with no guarantee, guys, all right? I mean, we do have live births that have happened from this, but there's still no guarantees because at least half of the oocytes that are harvested in that ovarian cortex are dead. They don't survive the freeze and thaw process. And so while some live births have definitely occurred with ovarian transplantation in patients who have had cancer and then get this fertility preservation surgery, there's no guarantee. Okay, but that's not what we're talking about here. That is an ASRM recognized treatment for fertility preservation in that population. That's not what we're talking about here. But once again, how a proven concept in therapy taken out of context can get a little whack and kind of weird, because this has been the thought for the last really about, almost 10 years, where the idea is, hey, if we can preserve ovarian tissue for fertility, well, then that ovarian tissue should be able to preserve endocrine function, obviously, and that's called the fountain of youth for women. That's called pushing away the eventual and the otherwise inevitable menopause. I mean, who wants that, right? I mean, hot flashes, vaginal dryness, sleep disturbances, that sucks. So, hey, why don't we just take out a piece of the ovary, freeze it, stick it back in later? Well, the answer is, because menopause, while it does kind of suck, it is part of the natural transition of life. It's not a pathological state. Yes, it does cause some issues. Estrogen depletion is a big cause of cardiovascular complications down the road. That's why it's important to have good metabolic health at the beginning. And if necessary, use the appropriate hormonal therapies if the patient qualifies and she desires and doesn't have any contraindications. But to say I'm going to put back a piece of ovary back just simply to delay menopause gets a little sketch, okay? Not only is there the risks of the initial harvesting, which, by the way, has to happen when you're under 30, because you really want good ovarian cortex, which in and of itself, oddly, can risk you going into premature menopause if you take off too much ovary. But not only that, there's no real guarantee that it's going to function when it's reimplanted. We're going to talk about all this. But some of this stuff is just kind of weird. And there's two different kinds of autotransplantation we're going to talk about. The first is called heterotropic, of course, which is putting it somewhere else, like in the subcutaneous tissue in the abdomen. Because who wouldn't want ovarian follicles in their abdomen, right? I mean, in their subcutaneous tissue. I mean, sign me up. Or in the forearm, that's been published as well, where you go, ooh, I think my arm's ovulating. That's kind of weird. So, but that's a thing that's called heterotopic transplantation. And then there's orthotopic transplantation, is where they put it back more or less in the normal anatomical place, which is around the ovarian fossa, typically sutured to the pelvic peritoneum or retroperitoneal. And we all know, guys, if you ever had the retained retroperitoneal ovary, that can cause pelvic pain, it causes some scarring, and so that's got its own issues. All to say, a fantastic breakthrough in science and technology and surgery, which is ovarian harvesting and saving, in the cases of cancer, almost the entire ovary. See how that's different? I mean, that they literally take out half to the entire ovary for harvesting later, because it's going to get zapped anyway. So I mean, just may as well take as much as you can. But for menopause prevention, it's a slice of ovarian cortex. Now, the question is, well, how much of a slice? Well, if you take too much, the side effect is it can kind of kill that ovaries endocrinologically. And if you take too little, you're not going to have that much that's going to survive the freeze and the thaw. You see the issues here. But this is actually, there's all of these news media and weird stuff floating around internationally. It's not just in the US. I mean, this has been picked up in the UK. It's been in Canada. And it's just weird. Like, oh my gosh, there is now a new ovarian tissue-based cure for menopause. Is there really, though? Is there? Is that right? It's so out there in the fringe that there's a lot of people in ASRM, in the Menopause Society, saying, guys, pump the brakes here. This is getting a little weird. And maybe at one point it's going to be super easy, like just come into the office, we'll harvest a couple of, you know, take a little strip of cortex, probably transvaginally, no big deal, done under local, and we'll just, you know, freeze it here in the office and we'll stick it back in later on. Maybe at one point, I am sure that's going to be a thing. Almost sure, because medicine and math move so fast and techniques move so quick. But right now, with there's no guarantees, it's a little weird. Okay, so to put it into context, what I'm talking about is not ovarian preservation for the cancer patient. I'm all for that. These poor patients, my goodness, hats off to them for the struggles they got to go through. And if they go through remission and then want to have gone through this procedure and try to save their fertility, I hope it works. I hope it does. But just to stay off menopause, wow, a lot of risks here, guys. The benefits are very short list, guys. Let's call it what it is. It's no need for HRT, and if it works, the prevention of hot flashes and the potential cardiovascular manifestations of estrogen deficiency. I'm all for that, for sure. But the risks are huge, like the cost, like the idea that you have to get the tissue harvested under the age of 30, which is a surgery for nothing. And then again, there's no proven benefit as of yet. We don't even know if that tissue is going to work beyond the initial 6 months or a year. Now, here's the biggest risk of them all. If a patient still has a uterus, and I put this all together, right? And this hasn't even been addressed yet. Wait a minute, guys. Are you telling me that I can beat menopause? Yeah. Okay. Maybe so. Okay. I'm all for that. But here's what you also need to know. If you still have a uterus, and if that little strip of ovarian tissue is going to function and produce hormones, if it's producing hormones, that means it's producing follicles. That means you've just signed up for continued periods. And the time that you said, oh, thank goodness that little Red Riding Hood is not coming back this month again. That joker is going to be there for maybe like another 20 years. So welcome to your 70th birthday going to buy tampons at Walgreens. Sign me up. I mean, so you got to put it all into perspective. And does somebody want that? Is that a thing? Wow. Why? So you can see how all of the questions that are being brought up for this. And again, as of right now, no proven medical benefit, and no society has endorsed this. But if you read the news articles, you're like, this is legit. This is a thing. Yes, it is a thing. But just because you can do it definitely doesn't mean that you should. This idea of being able to harvest your ovary, or at least part of the ovary, freezing it and putting it back in, I mean, sci-fi stuff, right? Amazing. And for those patients, again, who have their fertility destroyed outside of their will, what a glimmer of hope. And the concept of this thing has been around for a long time, like early 1900s, where weird stuff was done in animals. Like, hey, little sheep, let's take your ovary, stick it in over here in this one, and see what happens. And it worked. It worked for a while until it like auto-necrosed or rejected or whatever. Because they didn't have the ability to freeze, to cryopreserve that tissue. That didn't happen until the 1990s, all right? And then once that happened, like, hey, we can actually freeze part of ovarian cortex where the follicles are, and then put it back in and it survives. This was a huge leap forward in this endeavor. And again, this was in the 1990s, first kind of done in sheep. But it wasn't until 2000. And now you're like, I know you're thinking like until 2000. Man, it's been like 24 years. Yeah, but that's still relatively recent in the development of medicine that's this huge and game-changing, okay? So in 2000 was the first successful orthotopic, remember, that's placing a tissue back more or less in its normal anatomical position, for a human autologous transplantation of a frozen and then thawed ovarian sample. That was 2000, and that was first done. And then the year after that, they took ovarian cortex and then did a heterotopic transplantation. They actually transplanted it into a patient's forearm. I told you, like, oh, I think my forearm is ovulating. Oh, yeah, it's that time of the month again in my arm. Weird. But this is the story of this process. And then it's kind of controversial, you know, when the first delivery, a birth actually happened from an orthotopic transplantation, because it gets a little gray and it's unclear if it really was from that transplanted ovary or spontaneous ovarian waking up. So it's unclear. But all to say, there have definitely been live births associated with this procedure. This was first recorded like 2004, 2005, up to 2006. But even when it's done for fertility preservation, there's no guarantee that that's going to happen. And again, at least that's the legitimate reason of trying to develop a family after something that's been ripped away from you because of a side effect of some therapy, okay? This is an elective. What we're talking about here is the elective surgery. And again, it has to be done based on the articles that this one group in the Northeast has written on. Has to be done ideally under the age of 30. So wait a minute, you're telling me I'm going to take a healthy female under the age of 30, ideally like 25, and take a strip of her ovarian cortex for no reason except to freeze it and then try to stick it back in later to delay a natural part of life? I don't know, man. I mean, I'm not trying to stir the waters here, and I have no beef. I'm going to be very clear. I don't know these physicians personally. I have no beef against them. Honestly, I'm pretty much in awe of them because, damn, you're talking about thinking outside of the box? Fantastic. I'm all for innovation. I think jumping in at the very last of anything, you're too late. I also think jumping in way at the beginning is kind of untested. So I'm kind of a new adopter, pretty fast to adopt stuff once the waters have settled, okay? But jumping in when the waves are still kind of topsy-turvy from the first person who jumped in is not my flavor. And I think this is where we're at right now. Now, there's others that are doing this. It's not just this one group out of the Northeast. I'll set that straight. It's not just them. There are others that are promoting this practice. Just watch that one for a little bit. Because, again, no insurance pays for this. So we're talking about thousands of dollars for an elective surgery for something that's not really clear yet. And again, Menopause Society, ASRM, is saying, pump the brakes here, guys. Hold on a minute. Just because you can doesn't mean that you should. Like I said, honestly, just to be very transparent, I really think this is very, very innovative, what this group and what others are doing. It's just way, way, way ahead of the curve. It's just that the data hasn't caught up yet, okay? So, I am very much in awe of them. I mean, they got balls. Talking about gonads, right? I mean, removing ovaries. No, these these people got some balls because, and I mean that with all respect, don't send me an ugly message. I can't believe you said that. I said it. Get over it. People are so serious. I mean, that's it, right? This is what, we've lost our ability to just be fun and relax. Life is too short for just snooty. I just don't like snooty. Oh my gosh, I've already derailed. Mike, hold on. I'm getting more coffee. Thank you for being part of our podcast family. We really are grateful and thankful that you've chosen to take this journey of medical education with us. You're listening to Clinical Pearls. Because something is in print, it does legitimize whatever the topic is at hand. I mean, let's call it what it is, right? I mean, if you can say, hey, according to the January 4th, 2024 publication from the American Journal of OBGYN that showed that this mathematical modeling could potentially delay menopause up to 40 years. So now we've left the 20 years, which is what the UK is saying, and going all the way up to 40 years of delayed menopause. This automatically becomes a legitimate issue. So let's address this. And guys, I am not, by any means, I'm not trying to tear down the work that was done here. This is a publication. This went through peer review because the science, the methodology, the math here is right. But this is not a clinical publication. This is a math modeling to say, hey, we did this at X age of women, like under the age of 30, and based on the ability of tissue to survive thawing, and if we placed it back in X number of women, based on this size of tissue, maybe we can delay, and we anticipate survival of the tissue to produce hormones for this amount of time, maybe we could delay menopause for over 40 years, to be exact, 47 years. But this is not a prospective study. It's not a systematic review. It's not an RCT. It's a math modeling. It's right there in the title. It says modeling delay of age at natural menopause with planned tissue cryopreservation and autologous transplantation. See, super scientific-y, right? It's a math model. It's not a true patient population, but this is making its way. It's got picked up like, oh my gosh, if you auto transplant part of your ovary and put it in later, like at 40, wow, maybe you can delay menopause for another 40 years. Who the hell wants to go delay menopause until they're 80? Which means if they have a uterus, nobody talks about the fact that that thing's still going to be responding to ovarian tissue, which is what you asked to have, ovarian hormones. So you're going to be having periods at 70 and 80? Whew, it's like, hey, grandma, I'm going to go over there and get some more pads. Do you need any? Ugh. Things to consider. I don't want to make it seem like this has just popped up on the radar in these last few days, because this group in the Northeast here in the States has had some publications in print and been advocating for this for some time now, for several years. I'm looking at a commentary right here out of Total Health. It's out of the UK, and the title is Surgery for Menopause, an Irresponsible Message. Yes, that's not my title. I'm looking at it right here. It's www.totalhealth.co.uk, and this was written on June the 10th, 2020. I just want to read you this commentary here because it really do put this in perspective. Now, remember, this is 4 years ago. 4 years ago, talking about the exact same thing, that's for some reason, because of this publication from January, now it's all hot and super sexy again, when this was controversial 4 years ago. Okay, now remember, the title is Surgery for Menopause, an Irresponsible Message. Not mine. But here's the quote that it says, quote, "There is no long-term data, and it's wrong to claim that this procedure will delay menopause by 20 years. Well, now the new model says 47 years. They go on to say, quote, "It is difficult to imagine that transplanting such a small volume of ovarian tissue, like a cortex strip, will produce adequate levels of estrogen for very long. Furthermore, the excision of ovarian tissue in otherwise young women is not without risks, as it involves a surgical procedure and removal of a piece of the ovary that itself may hasten menopause. And here's the end part of their commentary. This is a drastic approach with uncertain benefit, and at this point represents a irresponsible message, end quote. Again, that's not my words. I'll post this link in our reference page out of Total Health from 2020. And it's just as valid today in March 2024. You don't think this topic is going around the current media circus? Well, it is. I'm looking at right now Medscape Medical News from March the 18th, 2024. As point of reference, today's taping is March the 21st. So this is just, what, 3-4 days ago? And out of Medscape Medical News, the title is "Debate Arises Over Ovarian Tissue Transplants to Delay Menopause." You think? Yeah, there's debates here, but this didn't spring up overnight. There's been commentaries from really 2015, 2019, 2020 going, guys, what is going on here? Why are we selling this, so to speak, to patients when there's no real proven benefit? I do believe there's a place for what's called regenerative medicine, but even that's not well defined. What does that mean? Is it plasma? Is it stem cells? The data is all over the place. And that's a whole other conversation. This is on the fringe of that. So I just wanted to be clear that maybe in the future, like I said earlier, this is going to be a thing. But I just wanted to prepare all of us. If our patients come to us and say, hey, what about ovarian autotransplantation for menopause relief? Right now I'm saying, yeah, that's whack. I'm not doing that. I'm not taking out a healthy part of your ovary and then charging you for it and then freezing it. First of all, where do I freeze it? I mean, there's got to be a standardized way to do that. And here's why I think as of right now, it's not ready for prime time. Though maybe in 5, 10, or 15 years, this will be super easy to do. But as of right now, I don't think it's there yet. And that is the statement of major medical, gynecological, and women's healthcare groups. And I don't want to be despairing to anyone. If you're doing this in your practice, knock yourself out. You do you, honey. I mean, you take, have a good time and you're sleeping good at night. I have no beef with you. I have a beef with not having the data. That's my issue, okay? So I'm not making any personal statements here. I mean, again, you do what you got to do, but this is kind of out there on the fringe. As we get ready to wrap up this rather brief episode, here's proof that stuff that sounded weird, like we're never going to do that, and totally became a thing, is super mainstream. Let me give you this example. A fecal transplant. How about that? That's a total thing. I mean, we all know that. I mean, fecal transplant is a known therapy for a very specific condition. If right now somebody's got really bad C. diff to the point that they're in jeopardy, why not take a little bit of poop, a little bit of feces, and get from a healthy donor and then give it to the affected patient's GI tract? Yeah, try to stomach those pills. So you can do a fecal microbiota transplant. That's a fecal transplant. It is a thing. Think about it. 20 years ago, you're like, oh, you want to take healthy poop, somehow put it into a little tablet, and then have a patient take that? Yeah. Why not? That's going to work. And it does. Fecal transplantation is totally legit. So is this kind of ovarian autotransplantation going to go in the way of the fecal transplant route? I don't know. Maybe. But we all understand that fecal microbiota transplant, that was at one point weird, gross, and super experimental, is a true treatment for Clostridium difficile. I know those capsules of fecal microbiota spores in the little tablets aren't supposed to come undone until they hit part of the colon. I get that. At least that's the theory. They're supposed to stay intact and then kind of self-dissolve in the lower GI tract, like in the colon for seeding. But yeah, I'm going to need some mouthwash after that one if that ever becomes one of my therapies in my life. All right, podcast family. So what have we learned? Well, we've learned that this issue of either orthotopic or heterotopic ovarian autotransplantation is fascinating. It seems to work, at least in the short term, sometimes. But there's no long-term data, no real benefits to this. And especially at a time that we have all of these non-hormonal options like fezolinetant and other options that are in development still to help relieve hot flashes. And we have other ways to give cardiovascular protection like healthy diet, weight loss, antioxidant-rich foods, omega-3s. There's other ways to do this without the need of surgery for putting back part of your ovary that is still going to make women menstruate if they have a uterus. Just a lot of questions, guys. Anyway, all right. I thought that was interesting. I hope you did too. Send me a thought or your concerns here about this procedure either through Instagram or Facebook, and let's bring it home. All right, podcast family, that brings us to a wrap. As always, we're thankful for you, and we're glad you're part of our podcast community. We'll see you on another episode of Clinical Pearls.